The dying patient was developed in response to a societal need to transfer the best practice of care from the dying, the care of the dying from the hospice to other care settings. Here we go. This is the same language. I was already talking about this. Number one, it's a societal need. Okay? Right. So it's no longer the need of the individual.
Right.
This is the better, greater good of society. And so the greater good of society says we don't have enough dollars to care for these old people in their last few months of life. Society needs that money. So there's a societal need to transfer best practices. That's what I just told you about before that's happening here. Best practices.
Right.
Transfer best practice of care of the dying from the hospice to other care settings. So in other words, what we used to do just in the hospice, which was cancer, terminally ill cancer patients who all we're doing is giving them pain medication, keeping them comfortable until they die. Now we're going to transfer that from only that hospice. Now we're expanding it again. We're expanding it to other care settings. It is not the answer to all the complex elements of this area of healthcare, but we believe it is a step in the right direction. The pathway also includes advice on the spiritual care of the patient and their family, both before and after the death. And I'm sure that's a globalist, one-size-fits-all spirituality. This is not true faith in Jesus Christ as the only way. You can believe that. It has been also used in 800 instances outside care homes, hospitals, and hospices, including for people who have died in their own home. So now we're taking this to the house. The letter has been signed by Dr. Anthony Cole, chairman of the Medical Ethics Alliance, David Hill, an anesthesiologist, Dowager Lady Salisbury, chairman of the Choose Life campaign, and Dr. Elizabeth Negus, a lecturer in English at Barking University. You teach English at Barking. Sorry, couldn't resist. A spokesman for the Department of Health said people coming to the end of their lives should have a right to high-quality, compassionate, and dignified care. Right. This is all what they're saying. High-quality. High-quality means the quality that the society determines to be high-quality. Compassionate, we're going to give you some drugs, and you're not going to feel any pain, and you're going to die with dignity. The Liverpool Care Pathway is an established and recommended tool that provides clinicians with an evidence-based framework to help delivery of high-quality care for people at the end of their life. This is all evidence-based.
Yes.
This is all total quality management.
Yes.
It's back in Kaiser, plan, measure, assess, improve.
Yes.
You plan, you measure, you assess, and you improve.
Yes.
You improve quality. And so then, okay, now our plan is that we need to, the plan is we need to save money. And so how do we measure cost savings? Well, we killed more patients and we didn't spend as much money in the ICU time. So we measured it, we assessed it and saw that there was that. And then we decided to improve. And we're gonna improve by we're gonna save more money next time. So if we expand this outside the hospice, and now we can do it in the home, now we can do it in the hospital, and we can do this, we can even save more money. And we're gonna do this continuous process. And the doctors that fall outside the guidelines are going to be either brainwashed into it or kicked out of the system.
I want you guys to bring to my remembrance again, because I want to, you know, say this. I was looking at something on Chuck Baldwin's website in a year, I think it was May 27, 2008, when he was put himself on the ticket as a candidate for the president of the United States, and he was talking about what he would do. And I went over this article just now on my website, and I want you to listen to this, because all these rules and regulations that Dr. Klink is talking to us about comes through the Department of Education in this country. Uh-huh. Now, listen to what Chuck says. He says, if I were president, I would disband the Department of Education. He says, does anybody really believe that, despite the billions and billions spent, that the education system is not deteriorating at a rapid pace in the United States? Who did President Obama put in charge of the Department of Education for the youngsters? A guy that believes in fisting, mm-hmm. a homosexual, mm-hmm. a pervert, mm-hmm.
Right.
You see, it is the Department of Education, the education departments of this country that is writing these agendas, putting them in. Mm-hmm. These are total humanists, and they are doing away with the Constitution of the United States. Okay, you know, and then he quotes the 10th Amendment sets forth that the powers are not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Right.
You see, not to the federal government to do that.
Right.
I ask a question in the philosophy class today. It's in our text. I says that if a guy had a daughter that was dying, there was a guy that had a daughter that was dying. She was 13 years old. She had the brain of a 3-month-old child. She would never get better. And he was living out in the farm community. And in the farming community, what he did is he put the exhaust thing in his car, and he put his daughter in the car, and she went to sleep. Mm. Well, they took him to court and gave him a trial and said, you shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. But we understand you are under mental stress, and even his wife said that she was happy that her daughter doesn't have to suffer anymore. And so they suspended his sentence and gave him community service or something like that. Well, the state of Florida found out about it, and they prosecuted him and gave him 25 years. Mm-hmm. So they gave him 25 years over what his citizens did because they understood his plight. They understood that the girl would never get better and that the father and mother were suffering. And so the father took it upon his rights to stop his daughter from suffering like that. And no one in the community that he lived in, mm-hmm. because that was community law,
right.
No one in the community disagreed with him. They said, if it was my child, I'd do the same thing. You don't watch anyone suffer like that. You compassionately help them. But the state stepped in, ruined his life, put him in jail for 25 years, ruined his family, everything else about that. And I, as a student, was it right for the state to come in and do that? And one student said, well, the law is the law. I said, is that the way you're going to handle it in the future giving of a law? If the law says to come and take all the guns of the citizens, the law is the law, are you going to give it up? Look at Nazi Germany back in the 30s. Mm-hmm. The law was a law.
Yeah.
When Adolf took all of the guns, burned down the Reichstag, and then put himself up as the savior, mm-hmm. and then start killing folk.
Mm-hmm.
The law is a law? I mean, we have some constitutional rights as human citizens here. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Why does this language sound like terrorist language? See, Obama would say that's terrorist mm-hmm. language, because I'm saying I'm not going to let you dictate to me mm-hmm. that I don't have that freedom. Mm-hmm. And as a Christian especially, we have that freedom. Now, I believe like you, Bob, that most of the people are just going to be hoarded into the camps and they're going to follow suit.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to threaten them or mm-hmm. offer them a bowl of soup.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take the bowl of soup and then they'll start turning me in. This is where we're headed.
Yeah.
This is sad. This is sad. Wow.
So, the last sentence here. Many people receive excellent care at the end of their lives. We are investing £286 million over the 2 years to 2011 to support implementation of the end-of-life care strategy to help improve end-of-life care for all adults, regardless of where they live.
Right.
They're investing £286 million because they plan to save much, much more than that. And so this is typical of what we can expect to see, where their idea of what is considered good medicine is clearly different than what you and your family member expect to receive when you hear that you're going to get good care. Because this good care is going to be curtains
for our society,
rather than wasting the societal money for the next couple of years of quality life for a human being.
Well, that's a pretty sickening report, but that's where we're headed right now, thanks to the Department of Education, to the cronies of the president, to this administration. that has socialistic ideas to systematically bring about the destruction of the country. But they're doing it by destroying the population's ability to think independently. We as Christians should think as biblical Christians. Now, I know a lot of Christians, Bob, are going to raise the issue about Romans chapter 13, that if the government's put in, it's put in by God, and we have to obey the government. Like the student said in the classroom, it's the law. Obey the law. But he said it with such a determination. He's saying, if the law is that we can do this to people, then, because this is what he was saying, if the law is that we can come in and do anything we want to do to you, you must obey the law. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this, man, this is dangerous.
Yeah, it's very.
Because your freedoms have eroded. And I don't think that in my life, Bob, I don't know about yours and Mark's, but in my life, I have never lived in my life where I thought that I'd be sitting here having a conversation like this in America.
No. I even remember as early as elementary school knowing that the difference between us and Russia.
Right.
And the difference between a government news agency and our news agencies, which at the time were truthful.
Yes.
And at the time were not pushing agendas and were trustworthy. What you read in the news you could trust as being factual.
Yes.
And, I mean, I knew that in elementary school, and I knew what a great place this is. And all of that's completely out the window.
Because that, Bob, those are the things that encouraged us when our nation was attacked, when we had to go to war, that meant, man, the recruiting office was always filled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to protect America, what America stood for. Man, one of the proudest days of my life is when I was inducted into the Army, and I was in that room in downtown L.A., and he asked us to raise our right hand, and we took the oath to defend this country.
Right.
Men were standing there crying. Mm-hmm. Yes, we will defend this country.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the kind of idea that we had something that no other country had.
Well, and prior to Vietnam, returning soldiers got a hero's welcome when they came home.
Right.
The whole American society had great gratification, were very great.
Yeah, well, they were grateful for what the armed forces did. Look at the look at the film clips in New York City after the close of World War II.
Right, that's
look
what
at the way the
of.
American soldier was treated in Europe when they liberated France.
Yes.
And all those other countries.
Right,
and look at Dwight Eisenhower walking in the concentration camps, weeping
yes.
over that, and then doing the right thing, making the very German people that instituted that. To bury the bodies and give them a proper burial.
Right.
I mean, this is the way justice and equity was in America. And right. I'm not saying that America was always a perfect country.
No.
Because at that time, there was racial stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm.
That Negroes were still being hung in the South. I'm not, my eyes aren't closed to that. But the point is, when we put on that uniform, it stood for something. The
yeah.
Constitution stood for something.
Mm-hmm.
I asked my students in college constitutional questions. They don't know.
Right.
They know absolutely nothing.
They know what they've seen on TV. And here's a quiz, a wow. pop quiz question.
Okay, pop quiz.
You guys
quiz.
Get it right. I think it was Al that, our old buddy Al.
Yeah,
that
I
told
remember.
Me the answer to this question. What is the highest law enforcement officer in the land?
What is or who is?
Who? Yeah, who is?
Who is?
I mean, as far as, okay, you have a dispute here.
Okay.
Okay. And the LAPD's here, county sheriff shows up.
Fire department, everything.
Fire department,
else.
And the FBI finally shows up. Now, in the movies, what happens? FBI shows his badge. Okay, we're here.
Yeah, we're taking over the case.
You guys go leave.
Who is the highest law enforcement officer in the land? Okay, let me think a second. That would have to be Secretary of State.
Well, I mean, of those three officers that are
there. Oh.
FBI, LAPD, County Sheriff.
FBI, LAPD.
County Sheriff.
Are the county sheriff. The highest officer of the land would be if the incident took place in Los Angeles. That would be, since I live in Los Angeles, LAPD.
Well, I believe it's the county sheriff is the highest officer. But the bottom line is it's a state official because he's the actual official of the state, whereas the LAPD is just an official of the city. And the state official, because of the Constitution, as you were saying right there,
right.
The state's rights overshadow the federal.
Absolutely.
But what you see every single time on the big screen, oh, FBI's here.
FBI's here.
You guys can all leave now. We got control of this. And that's how people are being brainwashed, that the government, that the U.S. government is the highest officer of the land, and they trump everybody because they brainwash the people to not know that we are a republic of sovereign states. The only state that acts like it's sovereign is Texas.
Absolutely, Bob. You're right.
They're the only ones that actually act like a state.
Yes, yes.
Why is Virginia called a commonwealth? Because it is a commonwealth.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth of Virginia. So, but the people are being brainwashed to automatically think that if we have to answer to somebody, well, we got to answer to the feds. And that's not true.
This is amazing. And the beat goes on. You know what? Some folk have been emailing me, Bob, and I'm glad that you really had a lot to say today because they were saying, we want to hear from Dr. Klink on this issue of health care and everything. And I think that this webcast really addressed it tonight because you're a medical physician and, you know, they want to know what you guys are feeling out there.
Right. And I like the fact that I hadn't read the article prior to this broadcast.
Yeah.
And I was talking about things like pathways and best practices of care and outliers and all of that. And then as we went into the article, all of those things were mentioned.
Absolutely.
So I'm not making it up.
Yeah. This is good. Boy, what a great webcast. Well, I'm so glad that you guys could join me. Thanks, guys. We've gone for about an hour and 20 minutes. It's been a wonderful, wonderful webcast. And I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in. And tune in every week. I'm going to be bringing more of these webcasts since we're kind of like back on schedule again. Guys, we always admonish the Christians that listen in to do one thing. And what is that? To stay into the Word. God bless you and good night.